Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. And hi to all my friends and peeps out there on Facebook. We are live streaming today. I'm very happy. My guest, it's been a little while, but my guest is actually in studio this time. So we're going to have our video going, and you won't have to just look at me the whole hour. So I hope, glad you are with me. Oops, looks like the live stream. Ah, there we go. It came back. So, of course, welcome. I'm very excited about today's show. I have a very dear friend, and actually, you know, this is a show I've been wanting to do probably since I've started my show because, we already got a heart from somebody. I missed who that was. This is a show I've wanted to do since I've started my show all about space exploration, but I haven't, you know, had an opportunity to get a real guest on to actually talk about space, which is something, the idea of space exploration. And I'm not talking like fantasy, Star Trek, Star Wars going out. I'm talking about like the reality of the stuff. So we're going to get into some, you know, not necessarily all reality, but we're going to get into some really cool stuff today. So you guys are really lucky. We have a great show in store for you. But of course, we have our quotes of the day to start you off. I know you've been waiting all week long for our quotes from the universe and from Abraham. So let's see what the universe and Abraham have in store for us today. First, from the universe. Whether or not you can see it, there is always a way. See it done. The universe. Ah, we love our quotes from Mike Dooley in the universe. Today, I guess, just reminding us that there are always possibilities, that there's always a way. Typically, there's a way and we just don't see it. You know, even in my coaching practice, often I ask people, I say, well, you know, how many different ways have you approached this problem? And they're like, oh, dozens of ways. And I go, really? Dozens of ways? I'm like, yeah, dozens. Okay, let's tell me, what are the dozens of ways? Well, there was this way and there was that way. And I think there was one more way. I said, okay, so there were like three possible ways you looked at it. And you're like, yeah, I think three ways. Okay, so not dozens, three. And I said, well, are there more than three ways to approach the problem? And they're like, well, yeah. And I was like, well, what way didn't you try? And then, well, there's this. And then there's that. And then there's that. And then when we open up to the possibility that there were more ways than we've tried, then all of a sudden we begin to realize, oh, there are other ways. There are all kinds of ways. There are all kinds of things that because we tend to limit ourselves in our own thinking, that then all of a sudden we shut down our ability to really see these different ways that we could possibly approach whatever is going on. So I think what the universe is trying to remind us today is that even if we haven't thought of it yet, that there is a possibility out there. There is a way out there. And sometimes it's not necessarily the way we would like, but there's still a way to do it. So, very interesting quote. Nice, short, and sweet today. Let's see what Abraham has in store for us today. Ah, Anthony. Welcome to the live stream, Anthony. As your world or your government or individuals within your government make decisions about what is better for you, and as they try to protect you from every possible potential experience, your lives become rather cumbersome, don't they? All you ever need is a vibration of well-being. Abraham. Very interesting quote. And, you know, one that I know relates to other things Abraham has said over the years around this whole idea of making laws and legislating things. And, you know, so much we think that, quote unquote, bad behavior needs to be legislated out of existence. And hi, Uzi from L.A. Oops, just going to like him there. There we go. And so Abraham actually believes that, you know, the laws actually just kind of get in the way of things, because what we really need to do is help people to come more into alignment of what authentically, truly feels good for them. And that's so much like, you know, we create these laws and we create these rules around things that we think are here to protect us, but all they're really doing is limiting us. And this is not to say that, like, you know, people don't do things that are evil or bad or wrong, which I don't quite necessarily believe in those terms or those concepts. But this is not to say that there is not some place for regulation, but it's when the regulation becomes more important or overrides really what we know inside, like when we rely on the laws instead of relying on our own conscience, then we're really missing the point. We're missing the point of life. You know, life is not about living according to a million different rules and regulations. I know probably some of my Orthodox Jewish peeps are going to get real upset at me because Orthodox Judaism is all about following rules. But really, it's about following the spirit behind the rules. It's about aligning our hearts and our souls with what we know is right. And, you know, sometimes that means disobeying rules, right? I mean, like, just being gay was illegal. It's probably still illegal in many countries around the world, but now gay marriage is legal. You know, sometimes we know that there are rules in place, but they're outmoded and outdated and things need to change. And so sometimes, you know, when if we just follow our conscience and our spirit and our heart and what we know deep inside is what right, that frees us from the chains and the bonds of all getting every little rule and every little thing right. So it's a really interesting quote from Abraham, and actually very interesting that happens to mention government because, again, you know, these quotes are amazing because I don't cherry pick them. These are the quotes that came to me this morning in my inbox, and they always seem so apropos for what my show happens to be about or who my guest is that day. And I'm not going to dilly-dally. I hope you liked your quotes. You'll have more quotes of the week next week. But I really want to bring on my guest now because my guest today is somebody who I've known for close to 25 years. I'm going to just flip our live stream onto my friend Steve here. Steve Wolf has been a writer and an advocate for the advancement of space settlement concepts and related ideas for more than 25 years, like yours truly. He was a legislative aide for the late Congressman George Brown Jr., where he served as the executive director of the Congressional Space Caucus. He served on the board of directors of the National Space Society, which is where we met. He was president of the New York Space Frontier Society, where we met, and was advocate of the Space Frontier Foundation. Yes, which I know many people back in the days when Rick Tumlinson was still here in New York City. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still speak to Rick?
Oh, yeah.
Man. You got to send him my regards. He probably doesn't remember me, though. Steve drafted the Space Settlement Act of 1998 for Congressman Brown, which the bill was signed into law by Ronald Reagan as part of the NASA authorization bill. Steve currently serves on the board of editors of the Journal of Space Philosophy. He's also currently serving as the deputy executive director of Spacecom. And I am extremely happy that our travels bring us back together again after so many years, Steve. It's great to see you. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour.
Hey, Sam. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. As you can tell, I'm excited today.
Yeah, no, it's great. Congratulations on your show.
Thank you.
And I have to say that opening bit has inspired me. So
cool.
Excellent. Totally in line with what I think we're going to chat about today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I always like to start off kind of giving the audience a little bit of a background. I mean, I read your bio, but I want to give people just a little bit more of a background before we get into your book and kind of some of these concepts of space exploration. So, Steve, you, like me, I guess, were a child of, you know, the 60s and 70s. I'm assuming things like the Apollo launches and landing on the moon, like that just enthralled you as a kid.
Right. Right. Like, you know, I was born in 1960. I think you probably
62.
You know, 62. So it was right around that time. We're actually considered the children of Apollo or the space age children.
Yeah.
Because we were born right at the point that mankind first took his steps out into space.
Right.
And we were born right at that moment. So there was really something, I think, if you want to call it spiritual, taking place even at that moment.
Yeah.
Which imbued us, I think, and influenced our lives. And then with the unfolding of Apollo, You know, I was nine in 1969, and certainly that was exciting and enthralling and had an influence. But it really was, for me, it was a few years later when I saw a cover story in the New York Times magazine on a concept for space colonies. And on the cover was this full-color rendition of what a space colony would look like, orbiting in space, housing tens of thousands of people. And suddenly, space was completely transformed for me, from a place where a couple of astronauts can go and plant some flags and do some exploring. All of a sudden, to a place where humankind could take a major step and expand out beyond this Earth.
And it could be a place we could actually live and not just visit.
Exactly. And that was the concept of Gerry O'Neill.
The High Frontier.
The High Frontier that he wrote, the book that really, and it transformed me and it transformed a lot of other people. And for me, that was sort of the space moment in my life that that sort of set me on a path for what I've done and what's come after that.
And you know, I've said to people, you know, many times before that, you know, growing up as a little as a young child and like we were landing on the moon, that we thought for sure by the year 2000, of course, we'd have a base on the moon. We'd be going out to Mars and, you know, further places. Yet here we are and we have a nice space station orbiting the Earth and that's about it.
I mean,
a little disappointing, isn't it?
It certainly is. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons over the years that people have given as reasons for that. I mean, a lot of it sort of revolves around the NASA being a government bureaucracy. So a lot of the space movement activities that we've been involved in is trying to wedge out space from being sort of linked or shackled to the federal government, which has all sorts of priorities, has all sorts of other things that it has to do in addition to doing a space program or a manned space program. But if we could, if we could separate space from the government and put it into the hands of people who are excited in the private sector, who could freely develop these technologies, then that kind of a future might have been possible where we would see, we at this point, we might actually have seen in an alternate universe cities on the moon or Mars. So that, of course, leads us to where we are today and where we are today with we're suddenly now on the cusp of a whole new emerging commercial space sector. You know,
with
so
Virgin Galactic.
With Virgin Galactic and Elon Musk, and SpaceX. Jeff Bezos, you know, is on board. So we see all of this excitement, and who's leading the way? It's the space, it's the commercials sector.
It's the entrepreneur,
Okay,
but I do want to get into a little bit when we come back from break about how you ended up working with Congressman Brown and kind of why, you know, as we said, that, you know, it's been so government, like why you kind of initially kind of went the government route and what kind of got you to switch. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and my guest this hour is Steve Wolf, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hello, I'm JC.
I'm Joan.
And welcome to 21st Century Entrepreneur. We bring education,
insight,
knowledge,
awareness,
trouble,
craziness, and fun
for you, the entrepreneur who's looking to build your business
and your community. Listen every Friday from noon to 1 Eastern on talkradio.nyc. And you can tweet us at 21st CE Radio or Talk Alternative.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I guess this hour is an old dear friend of mine. We've known each other almost 25 years, Steve Wolf, who works in the space industry and has written a book about it, and who is a real space advocate. And that's how we met back in the early days when we were involved with the National Space Society, the local chapter of the National Space Society.
Yeah, I think it's over 25 years, which over is a little 25 scary.
Years. Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, you have two kids now who are like grown.
They're
it's like
grown.
Oh my God, that really like made me feel old. So Steve, I just want to ask you, you know, as you said before break, that you know, believe that really what's going to get humanity out into space is going to be taking it sort of away from the government and putting it in the hands of the sort of the entrepreneurs and the private citizens who have a real passion and can get the resources together to do it. But you had started your career working in government, didn't you?
That's right. That's right. Right. So I took that earlier. I told you I was inspired by the work of Gerry O'Neill.
Right.
And that sort of dictated, you know, what I wanted to do with my career and led me to Washington, D.C. To do space policy for on a congressional staff. And yeah, at the time, I was very much a person who thought that the government should be the one who could lead our way into space. I still actually held that belief. And
so were you like a political science major in college or something? I mean,
I was a communications major.
Oh,
so
communications.
It's sort of,
okay.
You know, it was not the exactly the route that I expected to go to, but I took a trip to Washington and kind of what they I caught Potomac fever, as they call it. So once I was down there and I realized, wait a minute, this is where I've got to be.
Right.
And so that was really that's where I focused my efforts.
And now Congressman Brown was a congressman from California.
That's right. That's
right. Were you from California at the time?
No. New York. However, he was had so much tenure in the House that it wasn't really. Whereas other more junior members may be careful to select their staff from their congressional districts,
right.
He had such tenure that he really was just focused on who the best talent he can get, you know, in Washington. So
I guess he saw like your passion.
He very much shared my passion. He liked to call himself a space nut. he was chairman of the science committee and had inscribed in the main hearing room the proverb, where there is no vision, the people perish, right?
Yeah.
So that's a famous proverb, and it was a favorite one of his. So he very much understood that we have to be thinking, we have to be visionaries, and he was a visionary himself. So when I went to him with a crazy bill idea for the Space Settlement Act of 1988, he was... quite surprisingly, was very supportive of it, introduced the bill against the advice of his other senior staffers who were not all that thrilled by the idea because it was really way ahead of its time. But actually, the legislation actually wound up getting largely folded into an authorization bill that actually was signed into law by Ronald Reagan.
The one good thing he did.
That was the one good thing he did, right.
So let's just get it out of the way for my listeners, because, you know, I always come up against this argument all the time, and I have my own answer to it, but I want to hear your answer to it. Of, you know, so many people say, oh, how can we think about going into space and using resources for that when we have so many problems down here on Earth? You kind of alluded to it a little bit, but what's your answer to those critics?
Well, you know, I feel very sympathetic to that. To those concerns, unlike other some of my friends in the advocacy community will just sort of try to dismiss those reactions. I mean, we do have serious issues. We have, you know, we're a human family, and we need to be sort of be very considerate. We need to be much more considerate of each other,
absolutely.
Right? So we actually, I kind of like what Bernie Sanders said. I don't mean to bring the politics of the moment into it,
right. Okay.
but what Bernie Sanders, they were asking about his religion. He goes, you know, I believe that we should be in a situation where we care as much about the child who's starving the other side of the world as we do about our own children.
Yeah.
And to me, that like summed up like where we should be as a global culture.
Right.
So, you know, and that encompasses environmental concerns and human rights concerns and civil rights, all of that, you know, how we treat each other in general. So, you know, there's so I agree with that. However, you know, we are a people, and this is sort of starts actually now getting into the nature of our book. We are a person, we are a species that is just has a ravenous appetite for the unknown, to knowing the unknown, to our curiosity, our desire to explore beyond where we are today, what's over the next hill, what's across that ocean. We also not just go there, but we also have this desire to sort of like, okay, we're here, how do we turn this place into a settlement? You know, how do we create a community here, you know, with each place that we, which each new, once we find a place that's favorable to us, how do we, or sometimes not that favorable to us, we have, how do we turn this into a place that we can live and we can raise our children and we can flourish and we can develop our culture here? So these are things that are innate, and you know, couple that with our ability to look up and wonder at the sky and wonder at the possibilities of what is out there. There is just a drive that is not prominent in everyone, but it's prominent in a fairly substantial portion of our population that feels the pull of space. And then once we realize, well, wait a minute, the moon and Mars, those are places we can go. And we realize that we have the means of going there. And the it's a draw unlike any other. So,
absolutely. You know, it's a great motivating factor, right? They say if you want to motivate a kid to do anything, there are two things that will always motivate kids: dinosaurs and spaceships. You know, it's like innate. You know, my answer is always also to point out to people that, yes, we need to feed the hungry children, but we also need to give them a vision for the future to make them to want to live. And that also there is so many benefits that come from an active space program, because you're doing basic science, basic research that help improve our day-to-day lives. And, you know, I used to know, it's been a while, but there used to be so many technologies that came out of NASA that were commercialized, especially in the medical industry, you know, the insulin pump and prosthetic devices and just all of these sort of, at the time, cutting-edge technologies that made its way into our daily lives, that helped our lives today, you know, because you're doing such basic research.
And actually, that actually gets to what I'm doing right now with SpaceCom, which is the Space Commerce Conference and Exposition, which is an event that takes place in Houston, Texas, November 15th through the 17th.
Okay.
And I just quick disclaimer, any of the views that I'm expressing here are not the views of SpaceCom. But what you're mentioning, these NASA spinoffs, how technology is being applied to everyday life down here is very relevant. It was relevant when you recall, but it's still very relevant today.
Yeah, absolutely. And
NASA is very active in transferring this technology, which is finding its way throughout our culture. So that's definitely an important, exciting aspect of that.
Okay, great. So let me just switch this back on to me. Just a big shout out to all my Facebook peeps that are tuning in. So one of the reasons that I wanted to bring Steve on is Steve actually wrote a book called The Obligation. And, you know, in the near years that we worked together, and we actually used to work together at a nonprofit where I was doing computer work and you were membership chair, I forget.
That's right.
Yeah. So I never really knew of you as a writer per se, but this book is not even just a book like, you know, a philosophical book or a nonfiction, but this is a fiction book that you wrote, ostensibly based a little bit on your experience with Congressman Brown, which is why I wanted to talk to you about him. how did the idea or the seed to write a novel like this come to you?
Right. So the well, the seed of the book is it goes back to and this gets to spiritual experience, our mutual interest in spirituality. I had been on a retreat with a spiritual leader, Andrew Cohen. Some of your listeners might be familiar with him. And someone
bring up his name to me recently after we spoke, and I was like, oh yeah, I know someone's just talking about him.
Yeah. Well, it was a very powerful experience that I had, and it was really a moment of awakening for me. And it was one evening when I was lying there, where I was asking myself the question once again, you know, why am I so interested in space settlement? Why do I care so much about that? What is it, you know, about? And so many other people, too.
Yeah.
And it really just the germ of it was, is it occurred to me in that moment. I kind of had this vision of the human evolution over the last 50,000 years of how our technology has evolved very, you know, sort of like went through in just a flash. And it really occurred to me that in that moment that humankind has always been on a path leading towards expansion into space. So we'd always been on that path, and that was what we actually were meant to do. If we were meant to do other things as well, that's fine. But one thing we were clearly meant to do was to develop the technologies and learn how to manage the resources of the planet such that they can be fashioned into ships that could carry the seeds of life off to other planetary shores. And that was really the germ of it. And then over the next few years, I really developed I developed those ideas and expanded on it through contemplation and so forth. And when I had a bit of a thesis together, I said, "Well, okay, how can I convey this information?" I realized that it might be more interesting to convey this information in the form of fiction. So along the lines of I had been a big fan of Carlos Castaneda and the Celestine Prophecy.
Yes,
someone compared the book to the Plato's Republic. You know, where you're using a fictional mechanism to convey some information, and so that's sort of what I did. So that's
just quickly before we went to break. So, over how many years from the time you had the inspiration to when you finally published it, how many years was that?
Let me see. The first inspiration was 2002. So when I decided, okay, probably 2005, I started to sort of write it in earnest. And then about 2013, I finally got it out there. Yeah.
So like that's like between like 8 and 11 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that's not an overnight thing. It definitely was something you sat with and germinated and developed over time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was right. So it was it was a process.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, let's like dive into what the story behind the book is and any other things that may come up along our way. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
Are you looking for a show where people talk about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Well, then you have come to the right place, because the Rob and Callie Show is doing just that. For the last 10 years, Rob and I have been having our own version of Sunday morning therapy sessions on the phone, and now we're bringing it to the radio.
So tune in and call in live Wednesdays 8 to 8:30 on talkradio.nyc.
And that's Eastern Standard Time, so join us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I'm very happy that we're here in studio with my dear friend Steve Wolf, talking all about his relatively recent novel, called The Obligation. So Steve, what's the basics? So we talked before about how, you know, this idea that sort of space is sort of our natural destiny, one way or another, just being explorers. And, you know, basically we've colonized the entire world just about. And so what's left is the closest piece of land to our world, which is the moon, and then Mars, and onwards. So what's the actual story behind your novel of The Obligation?
Right. So we spoke a little bit about my history on the Hill. So you sort of set that up, and then the sort of flash of insight that I had over a decade ago. You know, there's this maxim, you know, you write what you know. I decided that I wanted to do this in fictional form. I know about working on Capitol Hill, so and being a staffer. So my main character is a Hill staffer, and he works for a congressman. And like the Carlos Castaneda books, the way of the Peacefully Warrior. That's another one. There's a mentor and mentee. Mm-hmm. You know, so in my book, I made the congressman the mentor, and then the staffer was the mentee, and then it's a congressman, even though it sort of seems strange that a congressman, any congressman would have any wisdom to share these days. It's strange. But,
that's how we know it's fiction. Now.
That's how we true. But there are actually, you know, many, many great legislators that unfortunately get lost in all the noise. And that's true. So that's the basis, and the staff person is sent on a journey, you know, with the assistance of this mentor, where he goes off and he interviews six different individuals who represent what I'm calling endowments. Now I gave away it was a bit of a spoiler to say where I was at and that epiphany I had way back when. That's something that comes like at the end, you know. That's sort of what the guy gets at the end of his journey, but still, you know, encourage everyone to read the book, of course.
Of course.
But you know, in sort of unpacking this idea, you know, we're meant to do this, you know, we're meant to do this from the beginning. You know, I realized, well, what's the proof that we've been meant to do this from the beginning? And, you know, you start examining who we are, you know, what characteristics that make up the human psychology or motivations. Right. And I came up with six what I called endowments. So, and I mentioned a couple of them before. We're explorers. Uh-huh. We're settlers. Uh-huh. We're inventors, right? Mm-hmm. So we're problem solvers, right?
Right.
We're visionaries. Right. So we could sort of see things in our mind's eye, and we can envision cities and cathedrals and pyramids.
Right.
And then we are also we're protected. I'm actually blanking on one of them, but
come on, this is your novel,
protected.
Steve.
I know. We're
just think of the characters.
right. We're protectors, meaning that we have a desire to protect ourselves, and this gets into the context of you know, surviving. Mm-hmm. If we want to survive our planet, we want to diversify the population so that some of the folks are away. So these endowments that propel us, that make up who we are, and also not only point to or have allowed us to survive and thrive over these many, many thousands of years, but they have all conspired to move us in an iterative process over those years to become more and more complex,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to manipulate our environment to a greater and greater degree, leading ultimately to where we have this, where we finally develop this capacity to build rockets that could take us to other worlds. And,
right.
and lo and behold, that's exactly what we, as soon as we have that capability, we're doing that.
To
a certain extent, it's unconscious. So we're not really, we're not thinking that we're doing this because this is something that was written in our DNA 50,000 years ago.
We're doing it,
or even depending upon how you want to look at it, it could be even
older.
Go all the way back to the beginning of universe, if potentially, where this is sort of something that on an evolving planet, eventually that evolving planet will reach a point where it needs to, where an agent species needs to arise from that living world to manipulate it, its resources in order to create what you might call seed pods, right? A spaceship is a seed pod. It's carrying seeds of life to other planets.
Okay.
So back to the book, our character goes on this journey, and each one of these endowments is represented by an individual. So the interest to explore is an Apollo astronaut. The visionary is represented by a science fiction author that creates these visionary worlds. So, the protector is someone who is concerned about near Earth objects and asteroids, the potential for asteroids impacting Earth. So that's how the story goes.
So would you say the story is more about, I don't say science or philosophy, or is it more of a spiritual journey?
Well, it's really both. I think that I actually think that the concepts and the whole thesis of the book is a philosophy that could withstand some scientific rigor in terms of consideration. On the other hand, the character does have periods of visions that occur during his meditation periods, certain periods of meditation.
Okay.
So there is sort of an ethereal component to it, where he sees himself in orbit, or he sees himself propelled into the center of the galaxy and all this, and sort of so there's that. But then the there's a story, but the heart of the philosophy itself is, and this gets to the whole notion and calls the question the Darwinian evolution, right?
Okay.
So in Darwinian evolution, everything is happens by chance, right? So there's a
chance thing.
And so natural selection takes place, and the fact that we have a frontal lobe that's able to do all this complex abstract thinking was sort of a serendipitous occurrence in nature at some point that just allowed us to do the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of accept, the scientific community largely accepts that as just an accident in nature that we were able to exploit. And my feeling is that maybe some of these developments that we've seen or capabilities that we have, is it possible that it wasn't just sheer luck? I mean, is it possible that there was something else going on? I mean, the whole notion of a DNA code in the human body was, that concept just a couple of hundred years ago was just impossible to conceive. Is it possible to conceive that, maybe the universe has a DNA code that's guiding in some way? I don't want to jump too far and make too much of a connection, but is there some way that and I'm not talking about creationism or anything like that, but is it possible that there's something guiding guiding the evolutionary process? And that's really what that's one thing that I explore in the book, that all of this, everything that we see, is like a a seed that takes root and grows. Look, no two trees are the same. No two people are the same, mm-hmm. you know, but the, and probably no two universes are the same, but mm-hmm. perhaps, you know, each universe is guided by a certain set of principles beyond just, say, gravity. So,
right.
you know,
so
cosmologists like to say that, we'll say that, you know, everything is governed by gravitational forces, and mm-hmm. therefore, that's how you know, all the planets and galaxies sort of and star systems sort of fell into place. But you know, maybe there's something else.
More of a design to it. And it's kind of interesting also over the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years, as we, you know, become, look closer and closer into the universe and what makes it up, and quantum physicists actually end up turning very spiritual, and that some of the things that mystics have said for centuries is starting to be borne out by the scientific research into what makes us up. And indeed, you know, this is one thing I teach when I do my spoon bending workshop here, which, by the way, I do have one coming up, that there's actually more empty space than there is actual particles or matter. And even if you look at the matter, it's really not matter the way we think of it as a hard substance. It's more fields of energy. So even on the most fundamental level, we're really not hard, solid things. We're fields of energy.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I I'm no cosmologist, so I move into these ideas carefully, but the notion of that that 96% of all the mass and energy in the universe is not perceptible,
right,
is sort of an interesting idea. Well, maybe rather than that, all that matter and energy being invisible, you know, maybe there are other forces that are at work holding the universe together the way it's being held together, right, that we just don't quite understand yet. Not that it's not scientific, but that we just aren't quite there in understanding.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And mm-hmm. and just because it's not perceptible or visible doesn't mean it's not there. Mm-hmm. You know, people have a hard time with just even the concept. Some people have a hard time with the concept of the human body having a spirit, something ethereal associated with it. Yet, you know, again, if 96% of the universe is imperceptible, why is it so unbelievable that a physical body could have an energetic side to it or an energetic component? Mm-hmm. And that we can have more, that there can be more going on than we perceive, because mm-hmm. throughout the evolution, right, there was always a level of understanding, and then when our level of understanding grew, we were able to perceive or see more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it, exactly. Right. I do want to get back to the book a little bit, you know.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's take a break first, and then we'll get back to the book. And then I also want to ask you a question besides the book of why should the average person care about these concepts? Why should, you know, the average office worker, the average Joe Schmo, why should they care about space? So we'll talk about that in the book and more with my guest, Steve Wolf, mm-hmm. when we return.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and storytelling? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your brand new radio host on talkradio.nyc. I've been professionally writing and drawing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for over 15 years. Catch my new show, Secrets of the Sire, Fridays at 11 a.m., and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com right now.
TalkingAlternative.com.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Quick shout out to all of our Facebook live stream peeps. I've noticed the Facebook stream isn't always consistent, but it looks pretty good. Welcome, Steve, Brigitte, Uzi, and Anthony. Thank you all for tuning in on the Facebook live stream. And, you know, don't forget, you guys, on the Facebook live stream, while you're watching the video, if while we're live, you know, we only got a few minutes left. If you want to ask a question, you can always type it in there. I'll see it and ask Steve. So, Steve, getting back to the book, you wanted to talk a little bit more about the obligation.
Well, right, and you also had a question.
We'll get to that afterwards.
Oh, okay. No. This actually gets back to the beginning of the talk, where you were, you know, asking me about, you know, how do you respond to folks who say that you know, there's so many problems here on Earth.
Right. Okay, so then we'll get to the question, which is, why should just the average person care about space exploration? Why should the average office worker in Manhattan, where there's pretty much no space industry here, it's not like we're in Florida or Texas or California, where at least there's some industry, there's no industry here, why should anyone here care about it?
Right, and I think that, well, the answer to that question, you know, is... I think that there are a lot of reasons why anybody who really looked into this matter should care about it. Mm-hmm. But I think we're moving, you know, and I don't want to be too much too confident here, but I think we're moving to a point where, you know, it only requires a certain percentage of people who really care about it for us to move forward. And eventually, everyone else who doesn't quite understand why we're doing that will kind of get it. And I think that has a lot to do with guys like Elon Musk, who's already committed to getting to Mars and establishing colonies. I mean, there's other groups like Mars One, which is also trying to raise money and help people get to Mars. So there are these private activities, private efforts already going on. So it's less and less going, these activities and expansion into space is going to become less and less dependent upon government involvement, and therefore less and less dependent on taxpayer money.
Right. I mean, in the past, because it was such a large endeavor and it took so much money to develop the technology to do it, you really needed government centers to do a lot of research and development to do it. But now, as various technologies have developed, for everything from electronics to computers to life systems and you know, materials technologies, now that the pricing has come down, now it's actually within reach of a private venture to be able to afford to do something as fantastic as creating a colony on Mars.
Exactly. And it's not the government not going to be involved. I mean, you know, we have to remember, NASA's spending almost $20 billion a year. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a bit of money. Now, it's only about half of 1% of the federal budget.
Right.
However, it's significant. Of all the federal programs that come under fire, that's the one that most people think it's money well spent.
Right.
So there's not a hue and cry that we've got to cancel the space program. That really just isn't the case.
Right. And you know, I've seen studies in the past that said for like every dollar spent on the space program, there was like $11 worth of private industry developed from it. That it's really truly an investment, not an expense.
Exactly. You know, the maxim is not a single dollar of the space program is actually spent in space. It's all spent down here, right?
Right, exactly.
So it's driving the engine, but not more than that. It's driving technology, it's driving innovation, it's driving STEM. Kids are get excited about space, about the possibility it keeps them interested in getting interested in energy.
What about the fact that, like, now in the media, we've seen so many movies being created about space exploration, about the idea? I mean, everything from Gravity to Interstellar to The Martian. And not to mention the myriad of science fiction shows. Like, now, again, they rebooted Star Trek, and there's a new Star Trek movie coming out the end of this year. I mean, isn't it becoming sort of more almost like in the daily consciousness in a way? Like, people just expect it?
Right. I mean, great science fiction shows. I mean, we're definitely in a renaissance, you know, in terms of the media, film and television.
Right.
With all of that, which is really exciting because, you know, basically because, you know, Hollywood, they're only going to produce what they think is going to help make them money.
Right.
And these movies are making them a lot of money to the point where I had a scriptwriter took my book and converted it to a script and is trying to we're talking about making it a 6-part series, so that's an exciting development.
Let us know when that happens. We got to have a premiere here when that happens, Steve. You got to promise me. I want the exclusive.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. The Martian, you know, right? These movies are just capturing the imagination, so the mood is just incredible right now. And so whereas maybe 10 years ago, you know, if you ask me, how close are we to human settlement of space? And it was like, you know, I don't know, 50, you know, it's 100
especially
years
after the Columbia blew up, our second losing a second space shuttle.
Right.
You know, that was back when I had my business Astro Expo in the space industry. And after Columbia blew up, I mean, trying to work, you know, creating a virtual space trade show for commercial space. And when the Columbia blew up, I mean, that was it. I mean, the industry was depressed for a while and I had to finally shut down the business. It was a little bit ahead of my time, which is typically what happens to me.
You're right. And that's what's happening. There's like so much in the wake of that, maybe larger than the wake of that, we realize that, well, the shuttle program can't go on forever.
Right.
I mean, the cancellation,
and there is no shuttle program now.
A lot of this activity is really driven by there's no shuttle. Okay, how do we get up to the space station? Okay, and then we created this program that called Commercial Crew. Right. Instead of NASA buying rockets and sending them up on their own to replenish the space station, they said, well, why don't we just see if we can contract with a company who will deliver this stuff for us? Can we find a good trucking company?
Right.
And that's what and that's what Orbital ATK and SpaceX did.
Right.
And so the government saved a huge amount of money on SpaceX because they didn't have to develop that rocket.
Right.
Elon Musk
did.
He spent all the money to develop that rocket, and all they're doing is paying for the ride. It's a great deal for the government, and hopefully they'll just continue to replicate that model for the rest of their activities. So quickly,
I mean, looking at things from just an industry perspective, I mean, now you're deputy executive director of Spacecom, which is, I don't know, the largest conference?
It is the premier commercial space conference. So there are other conferences that are bigger and they're focused on military. This is focused just on that commercial sector.
So from that perspective, really, what are you seeing happening in the industry?
Right. So it's really all about what's going on in low Earth orbit. So it's called the LEO economy is sort of a term that's being coined. The excitement is around the new small sats and microsats or CubeSats, where they are. It used to be that you'd build this giant, you know, multi-ton satellite and you put it up there and you pray that the whole thing worked. Now you put up thousands of small satellites, and if some of them fall in or don't work, you don't worry about it because you're gonna be replacing those satellites on a regular basis.
So there's plenty of redundancy in the system.
Right. So they compare it to like a cell phone. I mean, this one particular company, Planet Labs, is sort of leading the way there, and they look at it like a cell phone. So, you know, every year, every 2 years, they're upgrading their cell phones, and so with these satellites they're putting up there, they don't expect them to last for decades. They only expect them to last for a couple of years, and they're going to be replaced. So that's where they're getting smaller and smaller, easy to replace. It gets to be that you know, a single company could buy its own fleet of satellites, communication satellites, or whatever, sensor satellites. You know,
now, the reason why we used to do like one big satellite and it would have to last for years is because the expense of launching it into orbit was so great. Has the cost for going up into orbit dropped that dramatically that it's really become affordable now?
Well, part of it is the launch and how much the cost for the launch. The other part is the instrumentations on the satellites themselves, the instrumentation and the electronics and the software. Particularly, the software has made it you able to shrink it. So it's a combination of shrinking the size of the satellites and the cost of getting into orbit coming down. So you see Elon Musk, SpaceX is really driving down the cost of that. The rest of the industry, even the legacy, Boeing and Lockheed, mm-hmm. they've got to respond in kind to reduce their cost. Right. Ariana Space, which is another one. They're all, you know, so it's you have these disruptors, right? So you know that term. So these industry disruptors are coming in.
Steve, unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut you off because really it's at the end of the show.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
If people are interested in the obligation, where can they find it?
Right, so it's theobligationbook.com, theobligationbook.com, or just Google Steve Wolf, The Obligation, and they can find it. Okay, and yeah, I definitely encourage you to read it. We'd love feedback on that if we could.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful. And if people want to learn about SpaceCom, the conference?
SpaceComExpo.com. So that's SpaceComExpo.com.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for coming in the studio today and hanging out with me. It's great to reconnect with my old space buddy.
Right. Great. Same here, Sam. Thanks.
All right. Great. And thank you all on my Facebook live stream. I appreciate you guys coming in. The next couple of weeks, actually, I think most of my guests are going to be in studio, so I'll continue doing the live stream. Everybody, please stay tuned. Coming up next, our newest show, Frank About Health with Frank Harrison, continues his show all about the healthcare industry and the challenges that face people with extreme medical challenges, but how you can still thrive. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and storytelling? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your brand new radio host on talkradio.nyc. I've been professionally writing and drawing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for over 15 years. Catch my new show, Secrets of the Sire, Fridays at 11 a.m., and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com right now.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Hello, I'm JC.
I'm Joan.
And welcome to 21st Century Entrepreneur. We bring education,
insight,
knowledge,
awareness,
trouble,
craziness, and fun
for you, the entrepreneur who's looking to build your business
and your community. Listen every Friday from noon to 1 Eastern on talkradio.nyc. And you can tweet us at 21st CE Radio or Talk Alternative.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.